Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, June 7th, 2010.
It's 2010.
I'm still. Sam Minter. I you know, every time I have to think about the year a little bit, just to make sure.
You are Sam Minter, yes.
I am still Sam Minter, and you're still Yvonne Bo. One thing I want to mention right up at the top of the show, because, and I did not speak to you about this beforehand, Yvonne, but as close as you can get within the span of a week, this is our third year anniversary of doing this podcast.
Yay! How in the world have we kept it up? I have no idea.
Yeah, so every week for 3 years, we've been doing this podcast. And of course, we did it before, you know, there was a 12-year gap. Before that, we did it in college for a while. But
that was a little bit of a gap. What the hell? You know? It's a little gap.
But yeah, we've been doing this 3 years, haven't missed a week, although, you know, a couple times the shows have been really short, only, you know, the shortest one was only like 2.5 minutes long, the longest one was like almost 2 hours, so, you know.
I mean, we've done a lot of stupid stuff along the way, you know, we've gotten better as the show has gone along, you know, I definitely love the one in which you breathed on me, for example, for the whole hour, which was, you know, a show that I just turned on and I had tears laughing. It's just hearing this. And, you know, we recorded shows where we did great stuff for a long time, then completely, you know, managed to delete it all and then have nothing really smart to say afterwards.
Because we'd try to do it again, and then it was just like, yeah, whatever. We said something about bananas, you know. And
right. You know, But that hasn't happened in a long time, you know.
Nope. And, our current setup works pretty well. Cross your fingers.
Yep.
You know, so
cross my
And you know, we've been like doing a little bit of pre-planning and figuring out topics beforehand. Not very much. I mean, let's be
not
honest.
Not very much. Like, let's be honest.
We talk for like 60 seconds before we go on and record. But you know, hey, it's something.
Hey, if we could get a full-time producer, I mean, you know, that maybe could help this along. But
yeah.
Anyway,
and then there'd be all kinds of nice sound effects whenever we say something important.
Wrong or something, I don't know.
Anyway, let's move on to the real stuff. And I guess thank you for any of our listeners who've stuck around for all that time. You know, I know we've had some people come in and out.
There are a couple.
You know, I don't know. If you're out there and you've actually been listening since the beginning, drop us a line at ablesmay@ablesmay.com and let us know. My impression is that there are people who've like jumped in and out. You know, but the people who listen today are not necessarily the same people who listened 3 years ago. But, you know, I could be wrong. I don't know.
If you want to laugh at some of our early stupidity, you could go back and download some of those. Some of those are just hilariously
bad.
You
know, what I really want, and I know it's going to be a long time before this ever happens, but someday I am going to be going through my storage space and find the box full of the tapes of our college Curmudgeon's Corner.
Oh boy!
And then I'll start putting them online.
Oh boy! Well, that'll be something. All right.
Moving on. The first thing, we are going to talk about Apple a little bit. We're recording this less than 24 hours before Steve Jobs' keynote at the Worldwide Developers Conference (WWDC) for Apple, where there are expected to be all kinds of announcements, new iPhones. You know, there's rumors about MobileMe, there's rumors about Safari, there's all kinds of rumors about all kinds of stuff, new Apple TV, you name it, somebody's got a rumor about it. We're not going to talk about that, because by the time I get this show out the door and up onto the internet for people to listen to it, that will have happened, and so we just look like incredible idiots talking about stuff.
Or geniuses.
You know, you never know, but, you know, given that's going on, we're just going to skip that. We will talk about whatever actually comes out of that next week. The one thing we wanted to talk about this week, however, were the changes that AT&T has announced to their data plans. And this is, you know, very much in reaction, I think, to the way in which people are actually using their iPhones and now iPads. So basically what they've done, to summarize, one of the big things when Apple first launched the iPhone was that there was a special iPhone data plan that was $30 a month, unlimited. And, you know, pretty much everybody with an iPhone, I think you were actually required to have this.
Yes.
But $30 a month, unlimited, you never had to think about bandwidth, whatever. Of course, you know, especially in certain places like San Francisco and New York, specifically have complained a lot that basically iPhone 3G data usage is almost unusable because there's so many people on a network trying to pull so much down it, and the AT&T just can't handle it. And in other places, that's the case as well. And anyway, AT&T basically said, okay, look, enough of that. Starting on June 7th, the only plans, there will be two plans available, $15 a month for 200 megabytes a month, or $35 a month for 2 gigabytes a month. And if you...
Actually, no, it's 25.
Is it 20? Yeah, it's
20. Yeah, it's 25.
So 25 for 2 gigabytes or 15 for 200 meg. And that's it. No more unlimited. If you've got the 2 gigabyte plan and you go over, you will pay, I believe it's $10 per gigabyte after that. And so a lot of people are like, oh no, this is awful, because you know, what's happening, of course, is people are using their bandwidth more and more. There are applications that are available to use more and more bandwidth. I mean, there's applications you can use to stream live video to the internet from your phone. In both directions, actually, from your phone to the internet and from the internet to your phone, obviously, for watching TV and stuff. Apple's adding multitasking in the next software update to the iPhone so that you can do things in the background, like play music and stuff, streaming over the internet, etc. Of course, all of these are magnified like tenfold on the iPad because, you know, it's one thing to, you know, watch streaming video on your little tiny phone. It's a whole other thing to watch it on an iPad. So basically, you know, it was looking like bandwidth was increasing and the usage for bandwidth was going up, 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 up. And people are like, oh my God, unlimited, this is going to kill everything because you're now going to have to think about what you're doing, blah, 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 blah. You know, and on the other hand, AT&T basically says, look, it's not sustainable. We can't treat the people who stream stuff on their phones 24/7 the same as, you know, sort of people with more moderate usage. It's
but crazy. Let me give you some realistic data here. I got my nephew and on a Windows mobile phone.
I pulled data for myself as well. So,
but here's a comparison that I got here. I got my nephew with a Windows mobile phone, okay? And I've got my wife and I who both use iPhones, okay? All right? Now, I'll read you my nephew's data usage for the last 6 months. And he's got an unlimited data plan
He's on Windows?
Windows Mobile, okay, on a Samsung Epix, one of the latest supposedly high sophisticated bullshit phones, right? Okay, he's used since December, 3 megabytes in December, 9 megabytes in January, 7 megabytes in February.
That's like tiny.
17 megabytes in March, 80 megabytes in April, God only knows why, and in May, a whopping 2. Okay?
Okay, now, how about you on your iPhone?
Now, okay, me, since December, 422 megabytes, 402 megabytes, 628 megabytes, 351 in March, 550 in April, and 529 in May. Now, my wife uses about 20% on average what I use, okay? Mm-hmm. So about between 75 to 150 megabytes. But the problem here is that what you see here, this is the big discrepancy. I will bet you that if you take a BlackBerry user as well and you put their data usage chart versus an iPhone one, it probably looks the same in like this Windows Mobile and iPhone comparison. Because I don't see a lot of people that use BlackBerries really to browse the web.
Right, right. So you're saying you think the BlackBerry would look more like the Windows mobile phone?
Yes.
Yes.
And I guess AT&T's got to be looking at this, and they're looking at this, and they're looking at this is a fucking nightmare, man.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is something that you and I have talked about before. It's been a while, but you know, basically, I think metered usage is inevitable, not just for wireless, but for the home too. I mean, it seems like, you know, in the end, I mean, what you're talking about here, I mean, there's no, the whole unlimited thing, you know, came out of everybody trying to ramp up quickly and get people on the internet and going back all the way to the AOL days. And, you know, yeah, got a lot of people on quickly, but they fundamentally from the very beginning were counting on the fact that nobody would actually take them up on the whole unlimited part of unlimited.
Right.
You know,
it's like an all-you-can-eat bar. You know, one of these salad buffet places. You don't think somebody's going to go in and just clean off an entire section of the fucking place. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're thinking, yeah, they're going to have one plate, two, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But this is like everybody just showing up at a buffet and just cleaning up.
And staying all day.
Yeah.
You know? And look, you know, I'm a heavier data user than what you just described. Like, my low.
Yeah, I noticed.
I look in the last eight. I pulled up the last 8 months of my history at AT&T. My smallest month was May, and I used about 600 megabytes in May. And almost, and you know, six out of eight were above 1 gigabyte, and 2 months out of eight were above 2 gigabytes, which is...
What the hell are you doing on your fucking phone to burn up 2,776 megabytes in 1 month? I mean, Now, let me ask one thing. Do you connect your phone to Wi-Fi on a regular basis?
Sometimes... And I think actually, like, my last 2 months are lower, and I think that's because I turned that... I started doing that more.
Okay.
But you know, because for a while, my Wi-Fi at home was sort of flaky. That's all fixed up now, but, like, so I think I wasn't doing it as much. But having said that, you know, it's fairly easy to explain where that comes from. So let's do this. First of all, of course, I have it set to sync both work and personal mail on a regular basis.
I
got a lot of that. Beyond that, I think the biggest things are going to be I actually use streaming audio very frequently. I'm not a big Pandora user.
But I do too, though.
You know, and I've occasionally done streaming video stuff too. Watching my Slingbox or doing Al Jazeera News, which is, by the way, it's a cool app and a cool news station, better than most of the U.S. based ones. But anyway, so I've done that kind of thing. Pictures and stuff. I don't know. And, you know, all it takes is a few times of, you know, turning on an internet radio station and leaving it on when you fall asleep for the night. You know?
Okay, that could do it. And I guess I don't do that. Okay.
And I don't do that anymore because now whenever I'm going to sleep with something on the, you know, on the phone, I use you can set a timer count. You can set your alarm to, instead of ringing an alarm, sleep the phone. And use that. But, you know, I found it relatively, you know, I was surprised because when I first heard about this, I looked at the last couple months and I'm like, oh, you know, 0.6 and 0.9, I'm nowhere near the 2 gigs. But then I pulled 8 months and I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm up there. And the thing is, it's going to get worse, not better, in terms of what you use. However, then I looked at it and I'm like, oh, crap. You know, what's it going to be like? You know, do I have to really be concerned? And, oh, my God, I don't want to go over 2 gigabytes and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, wait a second. After the 2 gigabytes, it's $10 a gigabyte.
It's not that bad.
Yeah, so, like, what would this have cost me? First of all, I'm grandfathered in. So
$35.
It's not, yeah, well, yeah.
You would have gone from 30 to 35, maybe $5 over. But you would have saved money on other months.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. I mean, what it would have been is, like, I would have been normally paying 25, and on the 2 months I went over, I would have paid 35, costing me a grand total of $20 over 8 months. So,
but I will tell you this. I just traveled this week to Colombia, okay? And I turned off the internet, the data roaming on the phone.
Probably a good choice.
All right. You know, I noticed that the per megabyte charge that AT&T has for the iPhone is insane. $20 per international megabyte roaming. Okay, so think about that. $20 per meg. Okay.
Yeah. So I had 2 gigabytes in a month. Let's do that.
2,000 times 20, it would have been $5,000 in a month. Okay, at that rate. Okay. Now, so, but look, like I said before, I keep Wi-Fi on. There were so many free Wi-Fi spots. Okay, down there. Okay, that I had no problem actually using all the data.
Actually, Von. Actually, Von, at $20 per megabyte, 2 gig would be $40,000.
It's $40,000. That's right. Holy shit! Yes.
Okay. Just correcting your math real quick.
Oh man. Yeah. I don't know. Yes. Oh my god. Jesus. Wow. That would have been one hell of a bill.
Yeah, the international part of these are insane. I mean, like, you know, and the one thing I think I would like, though, and I guess this plan is okay, given it's not, the overages aren't, like, insane. Like,
right, it used to be, I used to hate the overages because the overages were ridiculous. You went over and all of a sudden you could start, you know, you burned 600 minutes and you paid $30 for those, and then the extra 50 minutes cost you $40. Yeah, they're like, what the hell?
Like, I could see, like, if it was a plan, like, you know, you got your 2 gigabyte for $25, but then after that, it was the rates you just quoted for international, then, okay, then I'd be scared out of my fucking mind to even use the thing, okay? I would turn off, I would put it on airplane mode, and, like,
you know, all the time. Just connect on Wi-Fi, yeah.
Yeah, switch to an iPod Touch. But, you know, look... But this is actually fairly reasonable. The one thing I think I personally would like, given that this is reasonable, it doesn't make that much of a difference. If it was something else, I would feel more strongly, but I know they're trying to go for like the predictable range. Actually this makes sense for them. What I would like is an actual reasonable per megabyte charge. Screw this two-tiered plan, blah, 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 with an overage.
And I would like a way to be able to view how much I've used every damn day and not have to do
I want it right up in the bar next to the clock and the battery power.
Right. Show me a meter right there. Tell me how much I use. That's it.
Yeah. And you don't even have to – even better, don't even tell me in megabytes. Tell me in dollars.
In dollars, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, give me a flat rate that says, you know, you're going to play blah per megabyte, make it reasonable, make it the equivalent of this $25. But of course, the reason they don't do that is fairly straightforward. It's that they look at their usage and, you know, most of the people out there are probably over that 200 that they have for the low plan, but nowhere near 2 gigs.
Right. Well... You know, the pricing's not outrageous, but, you know, it's not $20 per meg.
You know, but a lot of people are freaking out about it. And, like, at first I was like, I'm of two minds. Basically, from the beginning, I've said, you know, they're going to have to do something like this. Unlimited makes no sense. Yeah, they have. This is also for all the people who are, like, concerned about, you know, pirates who are constantly downloading stuff and filling their bandwidth with BitTorrent or whatever. This is the way to solve that. Forget any of this, like, trying to filter out that kind of traffic or whatever. Just make everybody pay per megabyte. Right. And then, you know, the people who do that will have to pay for it. You know,
or you can resort to the AT&T international roaming rate.
Yeah, and then, you know, anyway, but
I mean, I
was worried for myself at first until I looked into the numbers, and then I'm like, oh, you know, this isn't bad at all. You know, this.
So was I until I looked at the numbers too. So I'm like, now the one thing is that I just realized after you made that $40,000 calculation, there was some talk about some people first having traveled internationally with their data roaming not disabled. Okay, and now Apple like ships it with the international data roaming disabled by default. Okay, yeah. I mean, you imagine the first guy that got one of those bills.
Yeah, well, pretty much remember they were all over, you know, all the tech sites when at least the first one who bothered to like contact the press about it. I mean, it was all over the place. You know, some tech writer or another who, like, you know, went to Canada for the weekend and got a $5,000 bill, you know.
Holy shit. Okay.
But
sounds good.
Anyway, so I think this is really much ado about nothing. However, it does, I think, it will make more of a difference over time. And, you know, they'll probably adjust the rates over time as well. But, I mean, 2 gigabytes is relatively high right now. As the capabilities of the device increase, and as something like the iPad also increases its capability and the number of people out there that use it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, 2 gigabytes is going to feel like less and less over time.
By the way, I looked up one of those. There's a guy in Winnipeg that got an $18,000 iPhone data bill. How do you like that one?
Yeah, that's nice. Oh, And just for reference, and then we'll wrap up this topic because we've been talking about it for 20 minutes. You know, my average rate, it looks like most of the time I'm between 1 and 1.5 gigabytes a month. Brandy on my plan looks like she averages only around 150 megabytes. Has been a little bit higher in the last couple months, but overall. Amy, the teenager on my plan, has been averaging, say, around 400 megabytes a month. And then the one other stat I wanted to bring up, that because it ties into what we were talking about last week about phone usage patterns. I have a clear trend in my minutes. If I look at the last, this is more than 8 months, like almost a year and a half or something like this. Towards the beginning of that time, I was averaging around 700 minutes a month. And in the last 3 or 4 months, I've been more like 300. So way down from what it was just a year and a half ago. And then Brandy's a bit higher than I am, about double what I am, really, because she calls her mom all the time. But then looking at the teenager in the family. And you know, teenagers have the reputation, or have always had the reputation, especially teenage girls, of talking constantly on the phone. Okay? And
what are her minutes?
Last month was 75.
She probably texted most of the time, I guess, huh?
This is exactly the point. And this is with the current generations coming up, and this goes to the change in usage.
She's not the norm.
No.
I've looked up my nephew's minutes. You want to see my nephew's minutes? Last few months? December, 1500. So January, 1600. February, 1900.
Wait. Listen. I will say this. Our average over the last 6 months or so has been maybe 200. Okay? Last month was abnormally low. And yes, most of the conversation that she has is occurring on Facebook, on Facebook chat. I've seen her talking to friends online via Skype and stuff rather than using the actual phone. You know, so there are all kinds of other communication modes up there. However, last summer, when she was attempting to sneak around and have a relationship with someone that we had told her she was not allowed to.
How were the minutes?
3,800.
There you go. You see? you know, I'm telling you, they still go for it anyway. What the hell? I, on the other hand, so my nephew topped out at 1,900 minutes 1 month, okay? I topped out at 2,936 minutes.
Yeah. I can't even imagine talking on the phone that much. Anyway, we've blabbed about this enough. Let's take a break and we'll be back. Oh, and I'm supposed to tease what's up next. We're going to talk about Israel and the flotilla and all that kind of stuff. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back. You know, I should actually tease everything right at the beginning of the show with all the topics for the show. And you know.
Did we? Do we? Go? Yeah, we do.
We've never done that. So, like,
I don't know. Who knows?
Like, after Israel, we intend to talk about the economy in general. And frankly, that'll probably use up all our time. But if we have any left, we might talk a little bit about Al Gore for a little bit because, you know, he's been in the news. And, you know, we also talked about talking about the oil spill, but neither of us have anything new to say. So, anyway.
I mean, they're siphoning oil. It's happening. I don't know. That's it.
And like, all kinds of animals are dying. I was going to say penguins are dying, but there are no penguins in the Gulf.
There's no penguins in the Gulf. Anyway.
Okay. Israel. So the basic story here for anybody who's had their head stuck in the sand for the last couple of weeks is that there was this flotilla of international relief efforts that had been being planned for a long time in terms of basically trying to break the blockade of Gaza. Ever since Hamas got elected in Gaza, Israel has been enforcing a blockade that is only allowing very, very specific type of things into Gaza and only via the Israelis checking it out first. And so lots of types of supplies are restricted. Obviously weapons and those kinds of things, but, you know, a lot more basic things as well. This flotilla was basically going to try to go in there and deliver stuff anyway. You know, they said, we're going to go in there. The Israelis said, do that and we'll stop you. They said, we're going to go anyway. And then eventually, one of the first of these tried to go through. The Israeli armed forces mounted an attack to board these. There was some resistance by the people on the boats. The Israelis, of course, had overwhelming force over, you know, anything that was going on the flotilla, and ended up killing about 10 people and injuring a bunch more. There's been a huge outcry about this. So before I start spouting any of my opinions, what do you think, Yvonne? What's this whole thing going on here?
I think that Israel has the, you know, so they're trying to stem the flow of weapons there. Fine. Okay, no problem. I just think that this was idiotic. I mean, I just think this wasn't thought out. I mean, plus, I think it was just abusive. I mean, yeah, you come in with an overwhelming force. Yes, you're going to be able to take them. You know, yeah, they were attacking you with whatever the heck, batons, shit they had, whatever the heck it was. You know, so this justifies going out and whacking 11 of them for it. I don't know.
Well, I think I generally agree with you, Yvonne, but I'm going to play devil's advocate for a little bit here. The Israelis, they were starting to board. They were attacked by the people on board the ships, as you say, with sort of makeshift weapons, things like knives as well. And then one of the people on the boat got the gun off one of the first Israeli officers and was preparing to shoot back. And so the people who were boarding next basically just started opening fire at that point to defend the first ones on the boat who are now getting attacked.
And that's, I'm not actually, you know, that's fine. Okay. Explained. Okay, great. Here's the whole thing about it is just, why in the world, if you were not being able to board the ship in a friendly manner in order to inspect what's on it, you see, trying to board a ship with that many people on board by force, I mean, what's the expectation? What did they expect was going to happen? I mean, Dave, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think there's two answers to what they expected to happen. One is that they honestly expected everybody on the ship to sort of raise their hands and surrender immediately. The second is they fully expected this to happen.
Yeah. And I'm like, I mean, I would have expected probably a certain level of violence to have happened. I just don't think it's...
There were a lot
of other ways to do what they were trying to accomplish without
fundamentally, you don't send a whole bunch of armed people into a situation with the expectation that everything will be sunshine and roses.
Right.
You know, and that applies, you know, as much to this kind of situation as, you know, what the whole Waco thing back in the Bill Clinton administration. Same damn thing. You know, if you put a whole bunch of people with guns somewhere, you know, the chances of something happening are high.
Well, I don't know if Waco is so much. I think probably Waco, I mean, did they set themselves on fire first?
No, you're thinking about the other one. That was once they were already attacked. Anyway.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, but regardless, like.
Regardless, when you go in by force in such a way, I mean, you know, there's such a high likelihood of casualties. But I think the problem is, look, Waco, they were standing off there for like weeks. You know, these guys didn't even really make. How much of an attempt did they really make to try to figure out a more peaceful way to actually inspect the ship? You know?
You know, I don't know. That's unclear to me. You know, but the fundamental thing that shines out to me on this is, you know, the current Israeli administration just doesn't give a fuck.
Fuck. No, they don't.
Yeah, that's the bottom line here is, you're right, there could have been other ways to achieve the result that was wanted here. You know, and I believe once they inspected these ships afterwards, by the way, there wasn't really any major contraband here in the lines of weapons and stuff.
Which makes it even worse.
There may have been stuff prohibited by the embargo, but there wasn't any. They weren't actually, you know, sending in a bunch of rockets or anything, you know? But, you know, fundamentally, you know, there were potential ways that this could have been resolved without, you know, sending in, you know, the paratroopers or whatever. And I guess they weren't actually paratroopers, but you know what I mean. Anyway, because, I mean, just as an example, a second one of these ships, the Rachel Corrie, was boarded later in the week without incident. Now, right. Having said that, you know, it went second, so it's not entirely unsurprising that after all of this happened and the whole shitstorm, both the people on the boat and the Israelis were probably on their best behavior, you know, for this next one.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what I don't understand is just even beyond this, the blockade itself of Gaza, the way that it's being blockaded, I think it's wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, I mean, you know, they're blockading everything. I mean, there is no real way to be able to get into the area, you know, even like basic goods. And it's just the blockade as it stands right now really is fucking bullshit. I don't know. I mean,
you, at that point, you get into the fundamental basics of this conflict, which, you can say a billion times over, like, neither side here right now wants an actual resolution. So, of course, there isn't going to be one. You know, the Israelis...
But even the Egyptians have a closed border with them as well. I mean, it's like, I don't know.
But back to the Israelis not caring, or at least I shouldn't generalize to the Israelis, the current Israeli administration.
Israeli administration,
you know,
yes.
The fundamentally, they're, you know, right now, this ship was Turkish flagged. Turkey is one of the Arab countries who's actually been, or I shouldn't say Arab, one of the
Middle Eastern
countries that has a predominantly Muslim population that has been friendly with Israel, you know, and has not been belligerent and has not had issues and has been on their side in some conflicts. And they just took all of that goodwill and threw it out, you know. And
that's my point where this doesn't make any sense. It's like I was telling to somebody, you know, it could be a time when you're going to cross the street and you have the right of way and you see a car coming, okay? You can stand there and say, well, I got the right of way and get run over by the car, okay? Okay, so you were right. That doesn't mean it made sense.
Yeah, no.
And this is the same thing as this.
And I'll add as well that, you know, a few people have been going on and on about, you know, the legality of the situation in terms of international law. Were the Israelis, you know, legally entitled to do what they did or not? And I've seen some arguments that say they are. But you know, along the lines of what you just said, that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
First of all, international law is a whole, like, weird, fuzzy thing anyway, and what does law really mean when you're talking about governments doing actions? But completely aside from that, what matters here is the morality of the situation, not the legality of the situation. And, you know, were they in a position to do something else? Is the blockade moral in the first place? You know, if it is this the right way to handle it, etc.? And then completely throw aside all the moral stuff. From a completely practical point of view, in terms of enhancing the national security of the state of Israel, how are they possibly better off after doing this than before?
Right. You just hit the point on the head.
Because,
and I'm saying that they aren't.
Right, because what have they done? They've taken, you know, they've got a whole large portion of the world who's pissed off at them and will always be pissed off at them because of their mere existence, and they're never going to be able to do anything about that. But they took a bunch of people who were in sympathetic or neutral and are pushing them over the fence to not like them either.
Right.
How does this help? You know, and I think it's very, very short-sighted of the Israeli administration to, you know, and so far the administration has backed the people on the that did the attack, by the way. So there's no backing off and saying, you know, this was some commander going rogue or anything. The government's backed them up entirely. Yeah. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the order to do this came straight from Netanyahu. You know, but just what are they thinking? You know, and you know, and I think the trend has been, at least under, you know, Likud administrations, which is what we have now, to basically they have no desire for a, you know, a two-state solution in the Palestinians to have a country, blah blah blah, live peacefully side by side, nothing like that. They don't really want that. They, you know, and you know, it's getting more and more towards, you know, a lot of people are calling it, you know, sort of an Israeli version of apartheid, where, you know, the Palestinians live there, but just don't have full rights and are restricted in where they can be and how they can be places, you know, and fundamentally don't have control over their own destiny. And because even, you know, even in the limited autonomy that they've given the West Bank right now, because it's a more centrist, let's say, government than the Hamas government in Gaza Strip, they still, for instance, you know, have no control over their own airspace. You know, they all kinds of restrictions. So,
right.
I don't know. I, you know, some people have said, you know, what's the right way to put this? You know, look, both sides here just need a timeout. You know, it's just ridiculous. Every time one of these conflicts comes up, it's like, really? You got to be kidding me. Yeah, on both sides. I mean, it's just, why? Why does this even matter? You know? The whole talks under both their houses.
I put it this way. Northern Ireland, you know, got peace, for Pete's sake. And I will tell you that if I thought about it 20 years ago, you know, would you have 30 years ago, you would have thought I'd never see peace.
Right.
I'm like, it can't be done, you know, if people make the commitment to do so. I mean, I just haven't seen anybody.
And that's the thing. They have to want to. They have to, you know, both sides have to honestly care more about getting to a peaceful, wholesome, successful future than they do about whatever historical resentments they might have.
Yeah.
You know, and basically they have to be able to ready to say, you know, what's past is past. Let's look to the future. And nobody there is willing to go there. There's no trust. There's no anything. There's nothing to base a successful peace on. And you may have to wait for another generation or two to die out and be replaced by younger folks for that to happen. But even there, that can only happen if you don't keep inflaming the conflict further to get those younger generations radicalized.
I mean, let me tell you something. I just today on my flight back today, I saw the movie Invictus. Okay, which was the movie about how when Nelson Mandela came to power, how you know he basic the main thing he did was he supported. He was incredibly smart. I mean, he realized, you know, how sports can bring a nation together. And he said, you know, let's bring everybody together around a team that was actually hated by most black South Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And to forgive these people and like to you know, to do this and how successful it was in integrating and bridging, you know, between people. But it took. You know, one of you know the captain of the rugby team himself said, you know, he visited the prison where Mandela was during you know where they kept him for that long. He was stunned. It's like, how could this man have this much forgiveness in him? You know, in order to try to bring this nation together, and it takes somebody that is that big to bridge that gap. You know, and I'm saying that right now when you're talking about right now 2010. South Africa is hosting the World Cup, you know, the World Cup of soccer. I mean, the biggest sporting event on earth right now. This is a nation that 20 years ago couldn't host a sporting event because they were ostracized. But yet they've come together to do this, and it's like it can be done. But it takes somebody to just fucking step up to the plate. Just, you know.
And you don't think Netanyahu fits the bill there?
No. No. I mean, jeez. If there's somebody doesn't really fucking fit the bill, it's definitely Netanyahu. My God.
Okay. Okay. Let's move on. Let's finish this up, and we'll be back after. It's your poem of the week coming up. So enjoy your poem, and we'll be right back after this. Oh yeah, to tease with econ stuff. We'll be back.
Oh, econ. Yes.
Yes, econ. 101. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Groundskeeper Cemetery by Will Grofick. Doves of clumped soil are really pigeons. Let me wait for crumbs like they do. This is not another life, no vaulted space, shoveling the unglued about Voltface. This vaulted touch of nursing home smell, month-old maple syrup will reverse me. The coffin lovers watch me with envy. Valleys will prevail here if I honor the twinkle in their eyes. I rise and double back like a cautious diver. Dirt crumbles in my hair. My feet feel the wind like winter trees. Pigeons crowd my feet. I cannot move.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we're back. Okay, Yvonne, you know, as usual, you're the expert on these type of topics, so I'll just open it up with a basic question. There's been a lot of additional bad news over the last few weeks. How fucked are we?
We're not that fucked. You know, right now, people are just... You know, we've had these debt issues that are hanging around Europe, and now everybody's looking at every country in Europe and trying to paint them in the same with the same strokes as Greece, for example. And that's not the case. I mean, the other countries are not in the same situation as Greece is, and even you know, even if Greece winds up defaulting even on a portion of their debt, this is not the crisis that people are making it out to be. Okay. So that's one thing, but people have been just getting worried about it. But the bigger thing this week was just – it was a weak U.S. employment report, okay, in which new job creation was quite weak. The biggest job creation in the last from the last report was actually adding census jobs. Not exactly really how much job creation when we know those are all temporary.
Right.
So I think that's what people got a little bit concerned about the weakness in job creation. And I think that's why the markets were hammered. There's still a lot of jitteriness about the Eurozone, and you know they're looking at every country. I think Hungary was the other one that they were going after. Looking at Poland, looking at Spain. You know, they already been. I mean, not Poland, Portugal, Spain, Ireland. They had been under the radar, but now people are bringing you know Hungary into the mix. But if you look at the numbers, it just doesn't hold water. It's just people trying to really speculate about the other economies, and I just don't think that they're in the same situation. You know, most indicators and most economic indicators in the U.S. still point to a relatively decent recovery this year. And I would say that even like from my point of view, from my business activity, where I've been working down here in this market down in South Florida, I'd say that South Florida business is actually looking up quite substantially. So I really think that people are just getting nervous because for other reasons, but I see that job activity, job creation, and other stuff, it's happening. I mean, you know, business is moving, people are making investments and doing things right now. Interest rates are low. There's a good environment. If you can get loans, I mean, you're going to get good rates. And if you have the money to capital to buy stuff, you'll get really good prices on stuff. So, you know, I don't see any big hurdle right now that we've got right now.
So just from this point of view then, I mean, basically where you see this as, you know, we're in a recovery, it's a slow recovery, so it's still painful for people. It'll take a while to get back to sort of everybody feeling good again, but you're not really worried about, you know, a significant double dip or anything along those lines.
No. I don't see that there aren't things out there that we don't have any external we don't have any big external shock that I think could push us into a double dip. As a matter of fact, stimulus money is still going out for the stimulus that we got last year. I mean, a lot of that money, the effects of that are being seen this year. So no, I don't see how we're going to be in that. And interest rates are still low. So no, I don't see how we would wind up with a double dip by any stretch. I mean, if you would see some slowdown in economic activity, I would think it's more when the stimulus money runs out. It may be sometime in 2011 or 2012. But I don't see how, you know, we can say that we've got you know, that we're in that situation right now. So
still, like, you know, and I know these are not necessarily best measures, but just for the heck of it, I looked at, you know, the S&P chart going back wherever, and yeah, we're still as of the close Friday, we're at levels right now that were first seen in March 1998. You know,
yes, which shows you, well, you know, it depends on what measure you're looking at. Some people say the market's overvalued, undervalued. I'd say that for the most part, given how profits have been improving over the last quarter, the market looks cheap, because usually price earnings ratios during – they tend to rise – right? Okay, so let me actually explain. A price earnings ratio is the – you take the amount of stock in a company, okay, and you multiply it by that, and it gives you – well, no, the amount of profit in the company, multiply it by that factor, and it gives you the price. Usually, like, some of these ratios, like, look worse right now during a recession, because, you know, even though profits may go down, say, for a company, you don't think that company's become, you know, the core assets have really lost value. So the moment that the economy recovers, you'll get those profits back, and so therefore that ratio will get reduced. I think a lot of people are saying that companies look overvalued based on last year's earnings, but if you take it down to today's earnings and the current projections, the stocks are probably cheap. So I think that people are just, you know, people are, you know, they're like sheep, man, and it's just right now everybody's just been scared, they've been burned, they've been whipped, and there's very few people that are willing to just take the plunge right now and just say, you know what, over the next 3 years profits are going to be up, I'm buying. No, they're just finding every reason right now to get freaked out about anything. But even aside from that, those are some people. I mean, we're still getting a lot of hedge funds and everybody are still playing this market and trying to push it in one way or another to make money. And even though financial regulation has come out to try to limit some of this activity, it really hasn't still passed. And until some of this happens, I mean,
even when it does, I mean, it's not going to be as aggressive as, you know, some people think it needs to be. I mean, you know, there may be some limits, but a lot of shenanigans will still be happening no matter what.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, I think that I know that the SEC and some of the – because of what happened in the flash crash about a month ago, they were talking about putting in some tighter restrictions on certain things. I haven't seen that happen yet and what the specifics are. But until we get some more controls on that, I mean, just going to see wacky stuff like happened that day. You know, it's like nobody can still explain why, you know, all the you know, 80% of the stocks that went to zero were ETFs. If the underlying assets didn't go to zero, then why would the ETFs go to zero? And nobody can still answer that question. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know? I mean, think about it. I mean, you've got all these underlying assets, yet the thing that tracks it goes to zero, but the assets didn't. So how you feel comfortable buying it? I don't feel comfortable buying an ETF right now myself, based on that.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, in the end, I don't know. I'm the more I learn about how all of it actually works, the less trust I have in the market in general for these kinds of things. And so, it's very easy to get sucked in when you're talking about economy to talk about the market, but they really aren't
buy
the same
gold.
Thing either.
Buy gold, which is also stupid. Anyway, don't buy gold. Don't. That's idiotic.
Except you know, if it's actual jewelry that you keep in a safe in your house, as you said a couple years ago on this show.
Which that's fine. But, you know, don't go to the fucking market and actually buy gold. You know, it's just idiotic. I mean, you know, look, the one thing you try to do, you try to keep your money spread into a couple of different things. Don't get too speculative. Main thing is, look, bonds and just actual stocks, okay, are good investments over the long run. You know, just everybody tries to get so exotic with trying to, you know, do all these other crazy things. Look, if you have faith in a couple of companies, you examine them, you think they're good, you know, you think they have value, I mean, that's a good way to invest. If you don't want to even want to try to do that exercise, shit, then buy fucking U.S. Treasuries. What the hell? You know? It's a safe investment. I don't think we're gonna go bankrupt.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, at some point we'll default.
Yeah, well, you might be dead by then, so don't worry about it. But yeah, somebody else's worries. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. We don't care. It's the future.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
As long as we're good for next 3 months, there you go.
Oh, sure. No problem. I think we'll be fine.
Okay.
I think our paychecks won't bounce. Not this year, anyway.
So a couple of our segments have gone long, and I don't think we really have a lot for a fourth segment, so we'll probably wrap it up really quick here. Did you want to mention, you know, Al Gore's little troubles real quick, and then we can close up?
Well, I don't know if there's anything worth mentioning. I'm just surprised by the fact that he's got separated. That's all. Somebody just made a crack about the fact that they expected, you know, Clinton to be divorced before, you know, first.
Yeah.
And then Gore goes and,
I'll be the first one to raise my hand. And I predicted during the 2008 election season that if Hillary Clinton did not win the nomination, she'd dump Bill within a year. And that clearly has not happened.
Has not happened.
Yeah,
and then you go get Al Gore getting separated.
Yeah, well,
did
you know,
see why it was? I was trying to find in the news because all of a sudden I was just surprised. I saw a secondary mention of it, but not the primary. Any reason to explain this to why?
You know, I honestly haven't looked at anything past the headlines on this story, so I couldn't tell you. But it doesn't seem like there's some major sex scandal or anything like this. It seems like, okay, they're breaking up, you know, yeah. And good for them, I guess. I mean, I saw somebody else comment, too, that, by the way, you know, they're like, you know, oh my God, their marriage is a failure, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody says, look, and I think this point is good. It might've been Matt Iglesias. I'm not sure. Look, if they had a happy marriage for 35 years and then mutually decided that, you know, it was time to move on, then why is that a failure? They had 35 good years. They raised a couple good kids and now they're deciding that what's best for them is something else. Big fucking deal, you know?
I mean, I guess it's a healthy way of looking at it. I mean, you know, because it does happen. I mean, you spend a lot of time with somebody. I just can't imagine myself. I don't know if I'm living with somebody when I'm 60 already. I'm like, geez, trying to look for somebody new again? Are you serious? Oh, God. You know, dating sucks. I mean, let's be honest about this. Oh, God.
Yeah, I hear you there. And it's like almost at that point, like, even if you don't really like each other anymore, you know, at least there are no quantities.
At least deal with. Exactly. I mean, I don't want to deal with somebody else new in my house. I mean, are you fucking kidding me? It's bad enough for me to get used to my wife, which, you know, it took long enough. I mean, to try to figure out somebody else. I mean, shit, forget about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, good luck to them both. I mean, I remember Tipper Gore was one of the people who came in when I was at the radio station. You'd already left. We got to go to the White House. Tipper Gore was one of the people who came in, and I seem to remember something about roller skates and Walkman and her say. Oh yeah, this is what it was. It was a thing for talk radio hosts to get sold on the Clinton healthcare plan. And she came in and started talking about how every day when she's exercising by roller skates, she's listening to talk radio on her headphones. And anyway, that's the only thing I remember about Tipper Gore. Otherwise, she was also one of these people behind all the wanting to do music censorship and, you know, having labeling on music that had bad words in it and all that kind of crap.
Oh, fuck that. Then get rid of her, bitch. Okay, all right.
There you go. So that was Tipper Gore for you. Okay, we're done. Thank you for joining us for this special 3-year anniversary edition of the, new podcast
Woo!
Version of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yay. Yes, yay. Fireworks stuff and blah, blah, blah. And yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. Tell your friends to listen to. And email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, suggestions for topics, anything. You know, hey, yeah, I'll even, yeah, if you actually send us like a recorded soundbite, we'll actually use that as long as it's
yes
interesting and not obscene. If it's obscene, we may not use it in the podcast, but we'll definitely listen to it and enjoy it, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I'm going to correct this. I mean, you know,
it depends what kind of obscenity.
It depends if we like it. If we like it, we'll probably put it up no matter what the fuck it is. Okay. All right. So, jeez. All right.
Anyway, thanks for joining us. And we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
See you, Yvonne.
Bye-bye.